Hello and welcome to Digital Days Gaming, episode 1. And don't even know what to call it title-wise, but my name is Dave Hunt, and I'm joined by Michael Swick.
Growing Pains. Can we open with the Growing Pains theme song?
I think that's copyrighted.
It probably is.
Somewhere along the line. Okay, so we are Digital Days Gaming. Many of you possibly have heard our voices before on other podcasts or even guesting on other podcasts recently, but we have decided to branch out and do our own thing, and our own thing is Digital Days Gaming. So as the digital industry is starting to evolve and take over, Michael and I wanted to be here to kind of help guide you guys through and give you information. It will be a multi-platform network, not specific to anything. I mean, I've recently, purchased a gaming PC and, I've been looking at some slightly into mobile games. I know Michael owns a Switch, I believe. I know he owns a Switch, and then he has a gaming PC as well, and PlayStation, of course. But I mean, it could be anything that's, driving the digital, that's driving Digital Days in general. Like we'll talk about music if we need to, and live streams, and any kind of content creation, and we're going to try to leave a footprint and build a community around that. So I don't know, that was kind of like my feeling behind what we were building. I don't know what you were thinking, Michael.
Yeah, I wanted to do focus on multi-platform, just because as I've been getting older and as services keep growing and sprouting, I've been playing on more and more platforms. I'm still primarily a PlayStation gamer, but I've been getting more and more use out of my PC through Xbox Game Pass. So I'm getting my Xbox fixed through my PC. And then the digital aspect, it's just we're moving away from physical media. I still like retro stuff here and there, but my God, my entire gaming library is digital, and as we hear more and more about the next generation, it's going to continue to be that way. And I like to play on every platform that is available, and I like the idea of not having restrictions on what platform I play, as every platform has something good to play and enjoy.
Yeah,
so
and it opens up, I mean, for me, and we can't deny it. I mean, we came from, PlayStation Nation, obviously, and we were there. I was there for quite a long time. Michael was there even longer than I was. And the time came for just changes that needed to be made. And it was nice and refreshing to think about broadening our horizons and broadening the perspective and being able to cover something. Like, there's always the need and want to play other things and check other things out, but then there's this review copy, or there's this to cover and there's that to cover. And I think review copies will come eventually. Some of them already have, because we've gotten great support from relationships and things like that that we've built over the years through them, through PR companies and through opportunities that were presented to both of us. So in terms of our ability to cover content, I definitely don't think that will be limited. And it sounded like, at least from my end, that a lot of the PR companies were excited about the multi-platformness of what we were wanting to do as well.
Yeah, oftentimes games are on multiple platforms. There's always timed exclusives, but a lot of times, like Switch is getting a lot of the indie exclusives, or at least the timed indie exclusives, and Microsoft just bought a bunch of different studios that I would like to play those games. And I think even if you're primarily a PlayStation gamer, you're going to be interested in what Ninja Theory's doing next. Mm-hmm. So there's too many opportunities on every different platform. And there's also so many interesting new platforms coming up. Like, I mean, we're a couple weeks away from Stadia releasing, which we don't know what exactly that's going to be still, surprisingly. it's been a couple months. And there's just so many different services out there. I mean, Ubisoft has had their service going for a little bit.
I mean, hell, Fallout's making that awesome subscription service that I know you're going to want.
Oh, yeah. $13 a month? Yeah. There's so many different services out there. In 2019, limiting ourselves to just one platform is kind of like missing out on a lot of content that we could tell all of you listening.
Yeah. And we know we'll have a carryover audience, but at the same time, like, we think it's important for us to introduce ourselves to everybody and think about every listener and every, you know, possible subscriber as a new subscriber and totally new and never seen us. Like, maybe they Googled us and they found us, or somebody told them about something. So I'm going to kick it over to Michael. I'm going to let him kind of, like, introduce himself to you.
Yeah, my name is Michael Swick. I'm from Chicago. Been primarily a PlayStation gamer my, like, entire life. And I don't know, I'm always bad at explaining myself. I'm always the worst person to introduce himself at anything. I have been gaming for a long time, and I've never really found, like, a specific genre that I, like, focus on. I kind of dabble in a little bit of everything. Right now, currently, I'm just still obsessed with Overwatch as my, like, primary shooter, and I've gotten back into Call of Duty after, like, God, I would say, like, a 5 or 7 year gap of, like, playing Call of Duty consistently through high school, and then during my early 20s and mid-20s, just stopped playing Call of Duty up until Black Ops came out last year.
Four.
And, yeah, Black Ops 4. I couldn't remember if it was 3 or 4.
I.
Yes, yes, the great 4 logo, which I actually thought was pretty nice. And I find myself now getting back into multiplayer days, or multiplayer games, with Call of Duty and then Overwatch. And there was a while where I was really into Battle Royale games, but that seems to have stopped finally.
Yeah, I feel like you had I wouldn't necessarily call it a fad, but you had a streak of, you were heavily focused into a lot of single player stuff and story driven campaigns and things like that. You know, like, you were, I mean, I hope you could do this for me as well, but you were really into, like, you into Fallout and The Witchers and, mm-hmm. you know, things like that, to where you were pretty focused, and those were games where you needed to kind of just be alone and pay attention to what's going on. Spider-Man, God of War.
Yeah. When you have a part-time job, it's really easy to get into 100-hour RPGs. And then as I've gotten older, I've evolved into multiplayer games are just so much easier to just... You have 20 minutes to play. That's a round of Overwatch or like 2-3 rounds of Call of Duty. Mm-hmm. I still play those games. Spider-Man was my game of the year last year. God of War was close second. So I still get into those games. I'm looking forward to Death Stranding. Not as much as Dave is getting excited for Death Stranding, but I'm still into single player story focused games. I tend to, during the week, if I have free time, I will fill that free time with a multiplayer game or terrible movies and TV shows that I've been rewatching over and over again. So yeah, if you're listening now, right now, the show I'm rewatching is Community, which means probably this time next year, I will also be watching Community again, because I just cycle through my favorite shows months at a time. Buffy's next, so...
Oh my gosh, no, not again.
Yeah. Yes, yes, I'm going to get through Buffy and Angel one more time before the end of the year. Yeah. But Dave, let's hear a little bit about your gaming habits.
All right, well, like he said, and like I've said before, my name is Dave Hunt. Yes, I do go by Dave primarily. Very few people call me David. That's just kind of my own personal pet peeve. Which means that everybody...
Yep, don't call me Mike.
Yeah, which means that everybody's going to call him Mike and me David now. I'm 36 years old. I live outside of Detroit, so metropolitan Detroit. I've lived here pretty much 30 years, 31 years, and I had a couple years that I lived in Kentucky. I have 3 kids. My oldest is 20. My oldest son is 20. My only daughter is 17, and my youngest son is 4. And yes, I said 4. So for those of you that are counting, that's a 13-year gap between kids. I had 2 kids at a very young age, and then I had a, you know, like what I like to say is I had a 3rd kid at the correct age. I have been gaming for as long as I can remember. I have a brother that's 10 years older than me, and I can remember playing Nintendo with him and Super Nintendo. I have some, you know, interesting stories with my Super Nintendo lifespan with my older brother between sports games and, you know, things like that. And it moved into N64 and it dabbled into PlayStation for a little bit. And then my late teenage years, when I had my son at a very early age, I tried to focus on, you know, taking care of the situation that I put myself in at that time, getting through school and being able to support a family. And we, you know, my wife went down to college and I went down to college with her, where she went to college and picked up a job and started working. And then, you know, slowly kind of started getting back into gaming a little bit as I got settled into married life and learning how to be a father and things like that. And then that ended up going right back to Nintendo, like picking up GameCube and, you know, things like that. And then as time progressed, I moved over to, I picked up a PlayStation 3. I never really owned a PS2. I think I had one secondhand that I bought from somebody and I played some stuff. Same thing with PS1. That's kind of how that went back and forth. Nintendo had always been a pretty big staple. And then when I picked up a PS3, the main reason we ended up getting a PS3 was, at the time, it was like the best value for a Blu-ray player on the market. As you know, as DVD Blu-ray was, you know, becoming a little bit bigger. And then I had like Ratchet and Clank and, you know, and Uncharted, I believe, came with it. Like those two games came bundled, and that kind of introduced me into playing some of these games and enjoying those. And then, you know, like it just evolved a little bit more and PlayStation became primary, and I started seeing, you know, I really liked the Uncharted series. That really kind of hooked me. And then I still have strong memories of the PSN outage. And then being introduced to like the free games, and that's kind of where it actually introduced me to like the digital storefront of like where you could just buy games and, you know, or download things and stuff like that. So that kind of started rapidly evolving. And then, you know, I started using social media to try to interact with more people, because like, you know, it's better now, but like, you know, 5-7 years ago, like being a gamer was, you know, still kind of like, it kind of like pigeonholed yourself into like, okay, well, you're kind of like over there, like by yourself, like you play video games, like. And, you know, being in your 30s and stuff like that, being in your 30s and portraying yourself as somebody that enjoys playing video games still gets different looks from people that are your age or older. But that doesn't matter, because, like, I feel like now being a gamer, whether it's on mobile or on, you know, Switch or anything like that, I feel like you can be in very relevant conversations with people nowadays in terms of what they're paying attention to. But, I really like, right now, currently, I'm enjoying games as a service. There is a lot of games that I enjoy that are continuously updating and patching themselves and getting better. My primary game is Destiny. It's Destiny 2 now, but it's just Destiny for me. And, you know, I enjoyed a lot of The Division. I was hopeful for Anthem, but at the same time, very concerned about Anthem, just from the messaging that they were trying to deliver. And seeing some of these games kind of grow and evolve, and watching even a game like, you know, Black Ops 4 try to do the multiplayer functionality, but still the game as a service of updates and to get people's attention to come back and play the game 3 months later, or, you know, to build things up. The stories of how these games like resurrect themselves or rebuild themselves from the ground up is always fascinating to me. Like, I love reading about like Rainbow Six Siege. I mean, that game was hot garbage when it came out. And now it is like a top 5 esport game ever, which is crazy. It's like, it's getting up there. It's never going to get there, but it's getting up there on the level of like League and WoW and things like that in terms of the competitive esports scene. You know, League is like, in a, no pun intended, in a league of its own. But you know, like as these things are evolving, like I Michael and I both have a strong passion. We're actually going to talk about it a little bit later for the, you know, the esport and the live stream market. Like I think that it, at least for both of us, it interests us and intrigues us very much to watch this grow and evolve and to see how things are changing constantly and very rapidly.
Yeah.
So, we're going to cover, like, the goal is in terms of covering news, we're just not going to sit here and just kind of like, you know, regurgitate the news to you. We're going to look at things that are grabbing our attention or that are getting the attention of the community, and we're going to hopefully have, you know, discussions on these news topics. And you're not really going to hear us say like, oh, so-and-so released a trailer today, and oh, so-and-so got a release date. And like, I don't really feel like that's something that you need to hear us say, but I do feel like there are things that happen in the gaming industry that do require, you know, more of an in-depth conversation. And that's kind of what we're going for when we're going to do our updates and our news updates.
Yeah, we're hoping to avoid filler, because you can always tell when you're trying to put something together, or you're listening to something and it's like, they didn't really talk about that or spend any sort of time with it. We want everything to matter. If it's a new story where you want to talk about, even if it, we're going to talk about a delay later, or to go back on what Dave said a couple seconds ago, we're likely aren't going to have any news posts or news that we bring up that's like, oh, this game got a release date, unless it's a major noteworthy thing. Chances are we're just going to make the assumption that if you're listening to a gaming podcast, you're following gaming enough that you want to hear like long form discussions about things, as opposed to just getting like a weekly catch up or like a quick reminder.
And I feel that him and I have very different views on certain things in terms of like how things are perceived. Like, I wish sometimes, like, I still remember like when we were at E3 last year, like the conversations that you and I would have walking to and from the venues.
Yes.
If those could ever be published, I think people would be very intrigued to hear those kind of things.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's because we do have like different backgrounds, mm-hmm. and definitely different perspectives. I mean, you're a parent. I am not. I do have two cats, though. But
they're not yours.
Yeah, they're not mine. You know, I'm a step cat dad. So we definitely have different perspectives on a lot of different things. So there's usually a good discussion to be had, even if it's something that Dave might not know too much about or I might not know enough about. We're good at educating each other, mm-hmm. on various topics.
So, like, and that kind of segues right into the first piece that we want to talk about, because I've heard of this guy, but I don't think I've ever watched a second of him stream.
Yeah.
Because I don't, right. I don't even know really what he primarily streams. So, you're going to tell us.
So, Shroud kind of plays most of the big first-person shooters. So, you'll see him do Fortnite Rainbow Six Siege. I believe he was one of the major Siege streamers. And I on Twitch, I believe, the new story is Twitch streamer Shroud has signed a deal with Mixer, and he will be appearing exclusively on Mixer. This follows the big move from earlier this year Mixer made, where they signed Ninja, the number one Twitch streamer, to an exclusivity deal. Now, this is another streamer following Ninja. I'm assuming some money exchange hand between Microsoft and Shroud. Because Shroud is leaving behind, I believe, like 6.5 million Twitch followers. I believe he was at least in the top 5 of streamers on Twitch. And now he is moving to Mixer. And this is kind of huge because we knew people would follow Ninja into Mixer. And I wasn't really expecting one of the top 5 streamers to also leave. I would assume... I assumed Amazon/Twitch would have locked down some of their top streamers. And it looks like they didn't. And Mixer is just picking them up.
For them to get 2 of the perceived top 5 within 6 months of each other is nuts.
It's like the Miami Heat getting LeBron James and Chris Bosh, you know. To join Dwayne Wade. Like, it's a big move for them to do. And Ninja was huge. He still gets big numbers on Mixer. He wasn't as big of a move as everyone thought he was going to be in terms of, like, trickle-down economics of streamers, of people following him and then following other people on Mixer. But Shroud being another one, now there's more reason for his followers who are also Ninja followers to stay on Mixer. And it opens up, a new spot for someone to take on Twitch. Yeah. Or for Mixer to make their next move.
I mean, I think it's interesting, like, you talk about the stay on the app. And, like, that's kind of, like, the goal. So, like, I watch streams on my phone primarily. That's what I do. I might be watching them, like, when I'm laying down or if I'm watching a football game or something. And I'll kind of, like, pull a stream up or just, you know, if I'm... I don't even, in the car, like my wife is driving and I'm in the car, or random places, waiting at a doctor's office, waiting to pick up my kids, anything like that. I don't really sit, I wouldn't say that I sit and watch streams like I watch TV, where I'm like, hey, it's 8 o'clock, I'm going to watch this. You know, I don't consume streams that way. But I do know that people that have the ability to, or the job that they sit at their desk and they can put something up on the on a TV maybe, or on another monitor, or even in the background, and they kind of listen to the gameplay and they listen to the conversation, and then if that streamer goes offline, they may or may not just move to a different streamer. So I feel like if, you know, for a little while there, maybe with Mixer, if Ninja wasn't online, then the community just wasn't on Mixer. And yep. Now if, you know, maybe Ninja goes offline and then Shroud is streaming, then they can just move over to him and it keeps them on the Mixer page, you know, versus, yep. You know, like you had mentioned, now somebody else kind of moves to the top spot of the Twitch directory of, you know, Rainbow Six Siege or whatever, and somebody will just look, they'll watch him, or they'll, you know, they find other creators through hosts and raids and stuff like that that they ended up following, and then they just move to them. So this is now possibly two people, you know, two major view catches that Mixer is getting to hopefully then, you know, keep the people on there versus, okay, Ninja's not on Mixer, I'm going to open up the other app.
Yeah, and Mixer is definitely having issues. I think part of the reason Ninja didn't have as big of an impact as they thought he was going to have is Mixer still trying to figure out a way to kind of put other people, like, you know, you may also like situation. They're having issues like spotlighting other streamers, and they'll be able to figure that out more if they have another 6 million people join their app, and then they can get more data and see if they can spotlight other followers and grow their own as opposed to taking Twitch. I didn't mention in my intro, I'm a huge wrestling fan. So this immediately reminds me of 90s wrestling, mm-hmm. when WCW would sign WWF guys. And that would pop ratings temporarily, but in the end, the WWF won because they were growing their own talent, and Twitch is really good at growing their own talent because they're so, every streamer is on Twitch.
Right.
So as soon as one leaves, another couple can rise up.
Yeah.
So Mixer needs to now, they can only take the top Twitch people for so long before they have to grow their own talent and make Mixer a worthwhile place. But temporarily, this is a good move, you know, especially, I delete apps on my phone all the time. So like if I'm someone who like watched only Ninja and Shroud, I might delete the Twitch app,
mm-hmm.
And just keep the Mixer app.
Or if it comes down to like a space decision when you have another app you want to download, it's like, okay, like what am I really using? Yep. Like what am I really using on a daily or weekly basis? And it's like, I only go to Twitch now like every couple of days. Like I don't really need to go there.
And one thing you have to take into account, how many like kids watch, mm-hmm. who might not have a high-end phone with like a ton of storage space. Right. Like it sounds crazy to think of storage space, but if you think about a kid who their parents buy them like a 16 gig phone or a 32 gig phone.
Yeah, I've gotten the evil eyes from my kids before for getting them small gig phones.
Right? Yeah, no, but you can then attest to this. Yeah. To where your kids probably have to make the decision at a certain point of like, I got to get rid of something.
Yeah.
And that's when you start breaking down the apps.
Yeah, especially with everything having an app. Like, you know, like I take her to, you know, I'm out with my daughter or whatever, and I take her to Panera Bread, and we're pulling in, and she's ordering on her phone before we even go in there so she doesn't have to worry about it. And I'm like, it's like, okay, you know, like, but I mean, like, that's a gig, you know, or that's a half a mm-hmm. gig, and then, you know, Noodles and Company, or, you know, Jimmy John's, like all these other things, like every, you know, like all these places that these, you know, they go to, and those are ones that they use, you know, so.
Yep. There's so many little things that you have to take an account for, that these big moves kind of play into, especially, let's be honest, like the majority of like the Twitch audience for these big streamers are kids, mm-hmm. teenagers. So that is something you definitely have to pay attention to.
Right. And then the next item on our list is one that kind of baffled me because they just announced this. So Last of Us 2 has already been delayed.
Something must have happened.
Yeah. So in late September, we got a release date for Last of Us 2. There was like a huge event. It kind of was like coincided with like Outbreak Day or something like that. And they announced that, hey, Last of Us 2 is coming, I believe it was March.
No, February.
February, I'm sorry.
February 20th? Yeah.
And then now we're about a month apart from that announcement, and they have just pushed it back to the spring. They didn't even date it.
No, it's May, right? Is that it?
I thought they said spring 2020.
No, they gave it a date, May 29th.
Oh, May 29th, okay.
Yeah.
And they didn't say why. There was a lot of, and I don't think this is the reason why, but there was a lot of flack about the lack of multiplayer.
Yeah, but I don't think that's enough time for them to get multiplayer.
No, and they hinted separately. It sounds like that they may be working on, I mean, pretty much the way that Druckmann tweeted it, Neil Druckmann, the one of the creators at Naughty Dog, the way that he phrased the tweet that I read, or the one that he wrote that Naughty Dog tweeted out, was it almost sounded like they're working on their own multiplayer game, like on its own.
Yeah, he was. It's weird that he didn't just outright outright said there's no multiplayer, but he like hinted that like
there's
something that they're not paying attention to, or they're not working on, or weren't working
and
on,
and could be on its own soon, or something like that. Like So I mean, that's very interesting to me. But I'm with you. Like they obviously like maybe in August or whatever, you know, like they sat down with the Sony executives and said, hey, like we can hit this day. And then they decided to bring the media out, let the media play it. And those were nothing but positive from what I saw, like of allowing the media to play it. And then something went wrong.
Yeah, it could be anything. It could be rewrites to the script, because not too far or not too long before they announced a release date, they were talking about like wrapping mocap, like maybe a month or two prior. So there might have been like reshoots that need to be done, or just anything. There could have been like some crazy bugs that they're just like, we really need to fix this and we're gonna need extra time. And the good thing is Sony is really good at allowing their creators as much time as they want, so this can only be good for the game. It's just kind of crazy a month later. I would expect a delay, you know, like in December,
I mean,
not
even
like
if you know you're
going to
delay it, just wait.
Yeah, but it might be one of those things where, you know, Naughty Dog said to PlayStation, "Hey, we can hit this date." PlayStation PR is like, "Okay, cool, we're going to hold this event now," and then at that point, they're like, "Shit, we're not going to be able to hit that date," but all that event stuff was paid for, and they just had to go through with it. Video game development is difficult. So I'd rather it get delayed, and it's not a huge delay. I'd rather it get delayed and they don't have to crunch, mm-hmm. but they still get extra time to work on a game.
I mean, Uncharted 4 went through something similar to this, a little bit shorter, and it pretty much came out, and it even like later came out in Jason Schreier's book, Blood, Sweat, and Pixels, that they had a Naughty Dog went to Sony and said, we need more time for something. And Sony gave them more time. And then Sony actually had to delay Uncharted 4, not Naughty Dog, because they actually did run into a production issue of like pressing discs.
Yeah.
So that, you know, so initially got another delay. I don't think that this is coincides with that because of how long the delay is. If this was going to be from February to like April 1st, I would say it's a production issue. But there is, I feel like there is something in development that went wrong. I mean, it could be something as crazy as like, and it's pure speculation on my part, but something as crazy as, You were saying that they were wrapping, you know, the ending and stuff like that, and like you come to work one day and somebody goes, "Dude, my computer died."
Like, yeah, it could be like a weird mistake thing, or it could just be they're just like, "Hey, we need more time. We're not satisfied with something that's going on." Luckily, they work for Sony. They work for PlayStation, and they can get that time. And if anyone deserves the benefit of doubt, it's Naughty Dog, in terms of like if they feel they need more time. They can have it. They can have all the time in the world. You know, I'm definitely gonna play that day one. And thank God they're moving it. Though it's now I feel like it's more in the way, March and no, actually it's kind of out of the way now. Yeah, I just realized it's kind of out of the way because Cyberpunk I believe was April.
And I'm sure that had to be some kind of factor, though, in terms of when they were delaying it. Because, like, when they were in February, they were kind of at the beginning of this surge, this huge wave that was coming. And now they're kind of at the end of the wave.
Yeah, it does, though, get them out of Sony's fiscal year, I believe, which we'll talk about fiscal years in our next story. So Sony kind of loses out on this because you always want to make your numbers, like, big, though they're... Their business year might be a little bit different in Japan. I know that sometimes that's a little different. it's just you know, usually you want to get your games out before March, and this is gonna be out in May now.
This is gonna get looped in with their PS5 revenue.
yeah, which probably wouldn't be a bad thing for them to pack those numbers if that's how they're gonna do everything.
Do you think this delay has anything to do with them trying to make the two versions of the game?
No, I don't think so. I'm sure we're going to get two versions of the game, or we might not get two versions of the game. We just might get like an enhanced patch, since it's backwards compatible. Cause they don't have to worry about pressing new discs for it, though. They probably will do that anyways, just so it's not confusing for people.
Right.
When the PS5 comes out, next holiday. But yeah, now, May 15th is the Avengers. Oh God. So April 16th is Cyberpunk 2077. And then May 15th is Marvel's Avengers. And then May 29th is Last of Us Part 2. So they just got into a more packed time. And, we'll talk about the next story if you want to take that away, and talk about, other games that will be now in that window. Possibly. Yeah.
So, Ubisoft had their earnings call, which happens quarterly. And they seem to, like, as the reverse of like where Sony and Naughty Dog came out and said, hey, Last of Us Part 2 is being delayed. Like, they publicly came out and did a story and press release on it. This came from the earnings call of where Ubisoft announced that it's delaying Gods and Monsters, Rainbow Six, Quarantine, and Watchdog Legions into fiscal 2020/2021. This means that these games could all be released sometime between April of 2020 and March of 2021. So, like, that's a really broad window, and they kind of just delayed them. It sounds like this delay is from Ghost Recon Breakpoint issues.
Yeah, it Ghost Recon Breakpoint didn't set the world on fire.
It did okay sales-wise, but I think that they were more concerned about the community, the feedback they got about the game afterwards.
Yes, and Ubisoft loves long tails on games, so I can see Breakpoint having a long tail. Like, they already cleared the work for the next year for Breakpoint, and maybe they don't want to drop other games on top of that roadmap.
Mm-hmm.
That will cause, you know, people not to care about all the work going into Breakpoint.
And then for the most part, the thing that's like most interesting about this to me is that we've heard about Ghost Recon Breakpoint, Watch Dogs Legions, Rainbow Six Quarantine, and Gods and Monsters all at the same time.
Yeah.
And I, you know, when they said when Breakpoint was coming, I think I even sat next to you when we saw it, and I was like, well, that's really close.
Like, well, Breakpoint was really close from The Division.
I just meant from announcement kind of to release date.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, yeah, they're all close. But I also think, like, Breakpoint was too soon because Division had just come out a couple months prior. Yep.
Division 2.
And then they announced three other games that were going to be out within a couple months of the game, that Breakpoint. Yeah. Right. So,
Gods and Monsters, like, the first time we ever heard of Gods and Monsters was at E3, and then that was going to come out, like, I think early or late January originally, early February. And when we walked out of the press conference from that, it was like, I don't even know what that game is.
No one did. It looked cool. And Ubisoft obviously thought it was important enough because it was towards the end of that press conference.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they announced a lot of games, or not necessarily announced, but revealed a lot of release dates and time windows for multiple games to where they were basically competing against themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And having to compete against everyone else. Yeah. So these games now are going to at least be out of the way of the craziness. And also that could be why they also delayed stuff, is they saw how crazy the first three, four months of next year are.
Yeah.
And we're like, hey, let's just get out of the way of that and let's slap a PS4 and then slap a PS5 logo on these boxes. And then go from there.
Yeah. So it's just more development time. I know I've seen a lot of the Watch Dogs team tweet out things of like they're relieved. Like you had mentioned, like the crunch and things like that. Now they have more time to truly flesh out their vision of what they're trying to accomplish in these games and things like that. So those are all positive things. I mean, there's really, you know, no negativity coming from, you know, the studios about these delays, or nobody's like sounds like they're surprised that they happened.
And who knows, maybe they delayed these games because, you know, like, Breakpoint microtransactions didn't sound too great. And they were like, hey, we gotta fix this.
And they and overall, Ubisoft does a pretty good job with their microtransactions.
It just seems Breakpoint had a lot of them.
Yeah, Breakpoint is kind of like pushing the envelope as far as they have in terms of their games as a service stuff. And I think Far Cry New Dawn kind of really pushed the envelope. It didn't get talked about too much, but you could actually physically buy with real money, like, the best guns in the game.
Yeah. This is, Ubisoft's also kind of put themselves in that same light that I give PlayStation in terms of, hey, I trust them when they delay games. I also trust Ubisoft in terms of how much they react off feedback from the community. I feel like their last couple releases have shown that they listen to the community and have changed course when needed. So them delaying stuff, and I believe, like, the developers at, you know, Ubisoft's many studios paid attention to any negative feedback from The Division 2 or Breakpoint and are course correcting, and this could play into the delays. They could not, they may not, we don't know. It's just conjecture, but it could be just all of that going. And then again, I trust Ubisoft just because they don't abandon games too often.
Ever.
Yeah, they haven't abandoned one yet. I mean, other than not releasing certain games, Skull and Bone, they don't seem to abandon games once they're released. Mm-hmm. So I trust them to put out at least a decent product and then not abandon it once it's released.
And then overall, I wanted to talk about, like, you briefly kind of touched on it, you know, the upscaling possibility of these games, or I'm wondering, like, even if, you know, Ubisoft is kind of running into the same issue of, like, we need to kind of develop for two platforms, you know, like, they already know how to develop for multiple platforms at the same time, and they're double downing on their on Stadia the full bore as well. So developing for multiple platforms or an upgraded platform, because that's what these new consoles are going to be. They're just going to be an upgraded platform. I wouldn't, like, calling them a new console is hard for me, because I don't really feel like they're going to do anything, like, super revolutionary.
No, I think all the leaps are going to be in software, mm-hmm. and, you know, like, operating system and services,
yeah.
of these new platforms. But generally, the games are still going to play the same.
Yeah. You know? So, I mean, yeah, like, hitting certain parameters, I would expect, like, I mean, the biggest thing I would expect from next gen is that every game run at 60 frames.
I wouldn't even expect that, to be honest. I don't trust... I don't trust anything anymore, but I would hope. I would hope.
Right. So, do you think that the looming next gen is affecting these games?
Yeah, I think so. I feel like The Last of Us Part 2 being delayed kind of puts Ghost of Tsushima as a next gen game. Even though they haven't said anything, I believe they said it was running on PS4 Pro when I saw it at E3. But I feel like if Last of Us is taking Sony's spring spot, and Sony always has a spring spot, that they're not going to release Ghost
in August or September and then release a new console in November.
Exactly. Or they're not going to pull a God of War 2 and release it.
Yeah, those days are gone.
You know, like, because that was, like, a big thing. It's like the God of War 2 released, like, the same year the PS3 was out.
It released after.
Yeah, it was like, it released, like, within the first year of the PS3.
So there's no way that I think we see a PS5 in November and then see Ghost of Tsushima on PS4 in January. Like, no way.
Exactly. Unless it's cross-gen. Right. Unless they release two versions of the game. But even then, I think that's too confusing. And I would hope Sony would be smart enough not to do that, because how confusing would that be for people during, like, the holidays of just like, oh, wait, the PS5 plays PS4 games, so why am I buying... Which one do I buy? You know, for, like, the uninformed parent.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the Last of Us immediately just pushes Ghost to holiday 2020 or 2021.
Or a launch title.
Yeah, or a launch title. And Sucker Punch was a launch. The infamous Second Son, was that a launch game for?
Yes.
Yeah, so I feel like that immediately pushes that. And then Ubisoft loves to have stuff at launching of a platform.
Mm-hmm.
So any one of these games, if not all three, will probably be, like, launch titles or either re-released for the PS5. Because there's not a platform that Ubisoft hasn't put a game on when it has a launch date. Because they know that's a good time for sales, because the pool of games is limited for people to buy.
So, okay. So we're going to jump into playing and watching. So for me, I've played recently within the last couple of weeks, a little bit of Ghost Recon Breakpoint. That was something that Ubisoft was kind enough to send me. And it's something I'm still trying to get myself into playing. It's one of those games that I enjoy much more when I'm playing with friends. So the UI is a little rough. I've talked about that, you know, before. And but in terms of like what I mean by the UI being a little rough, the skill tree is massive. It doesn't require unlocking it for different classes, but you have to kind of think about your class ability and things like that. And I feel like this is just one of those games where you spend a lot of time in menus. I don't necessarily have a huge problem with that. However, the core of this game is playing the game with your friends. So when you pick up a new weapon or a new piece of armor and you got to look at the stats and then you want to change it a little bit and add a scope to it, and then, you know, you're like, hang on, guys, give me a couple minutes. I'm checking this out. And then somebody's like, okay, I'll be right back. I'm going to go to the bathroom. And then, you know, something that turned into a 15 or 20 minute mission is now an hour and a half or 2 hours of you working on things, because then you progress through the mission and you open up another crate and your buddy gets something different and he wants to change his stuff. And then you kind of, you know, so it can be a little annoying in terms of how much they give you and how often they give it to you. So like that, you know, and then you're in there and you're like, oh, I got to adjust this skill tree. And I, you know, there's a lot of transmogging in the game where you can, you know, keep your gear, keep the perks that you earn, but still have the ability to, you know, have it look the way you want it to look. And those are all things that take time. And, you know, and the UI slows the game down. I don't really think that there's any, like, I didn't expect this game to perform, you know, from a, you know, graphical standpoint, like super well, because it's such a huge open world game that I'm comfortable with how it looks. And like, it doesn't bother me that there's pop in when you're flying on a helicopter and you're flying, you know, 20 miles or 15 miles or whatever distance, what it would be like in real life. And then I have played a lot of Destiny 2 with Shadowkeep coming out, really enjoying the loop of what they're trying to do. It still has its problems, as you're getting up to, you know, max power and things like that in the game, and how the artifact is working. So they added the artifact with this season, where you upgrade your artifact, and as you're upgrading your artifact, you unlock more skills. And the way that you upgrade your artifact is through straight XP. And you know, you can, in each XP level is a certain amount of points, and you can do that from playing the game or in turning in bounties and doing, you know, powerful, you know, rewards and things like that. And then you get to pick, you know, there's like 5, 10, 15, 20. There's like 25 things in the artifact that you can pick from. And then you're only allowed to unlock like 12 of them. So there's decisions to be made. And some of the mods that are in there are like, you know, faster reloading for submachine guns and better, you know, better draw time on bows. And they added this, the coolest thing that I think they've added is you have enemies that you'll run into throughout the world that are either unstoppable enemies, barrier enemies, or overlord enemies. And what that means is that you need to have a specific mod on your weapons to be able to counter that. So you need, in order to deal with an unstoppable ogre, you need to have you need to have unstoppable rounds. And then you can equip those like on a hand cannon, or you know, like there's an exotic bow that came with unstoppable. Or you'll run into these barrier enemies that, as you're fighting them, they put out this barrier shield around them. And if you're unable to break that shield fast enough, they regen their health. So your loadouts have to be built around this artifact and around these champions. Because like defeating all the champions through a strike is how you get the best loot at the end of the strike. So corresponding your teams together and things like that is very important. And obviously they brought the raid out. The raid has been perceived very well. And then they brought this pinnacle system out of the hard cap of power. You know, as your gear gets better and you equip higher and higher items, the cap is 950. And you are able to do things that are called pinnacle activities, which are very few in the game right now. And those can slowly start to reward you with higher pointed gear. You can start earning like 951s or 952s. But you need to have a 951 item in every single slot on your character in order to earn a 952 item. So Destiny 2 has three weapons, primary, energy, and kinetic. Primary, energy, and heavy. Kinetic is your primary. And it also has helmet for armor. It has helmet, gloves, chest, boots, and a class item. So that's 8 items. So getting yourself up to 950 is pretty easy. You can have like a, you know, you could have a 950 helmet and you can have a 935 set of boots because your luck hasn't been good enough and your overall light level is like 948. And you're not really having any problems with that. But with the way that this pinnacle system is working of trying to get you to 960, you can just be totally screwed by RNG of the random number generation of how you get the loot. You could get, you know, 2 kinetic weapons at the same time at 951, and that doesn't do anything for you. So you have to have a 951 in all 8 slots in order to earn 1 952. And then you'd have to have a 952 in all 8 slots in order to earn 1 953. And some people are pretty annoyed with that because they, you know, Destiny has taught their player base to, here's the max number and here's how, and this is what you got to do to hit it. And I think they're trying to change that right now. And the players that are so used to, but I always get to max level, might not get there this time. The artifact does level you up seasonally. Like you can, as you're dumping the XP into the artifact, you do get plus ones or and plus, you know, you continuously get a plus one to your power level. So you can be, you know, 950 armor. You can be 950 gear level, but like 963 because of your artifact is you've leveled it up enough to get a plus 13 from your artifact. So you're really a 963, but the player base wants to get to 960. And after the season's over, like in December, the artifact goes away and it gets replaced by a new artifact with new mods in it. And the power level points that you put into that artifact go away as well. And then the next season starts, you kind of re-level the artifact, unlock the new mods, and also unlock the power level. So that's kind of where their gameplay loop is coming from, of trying to keep the player base engaged. And it's built around the artifact and the XP system. So
I can never get into those complicated games. Watching numbers has never been my thing outside of Worlds of the Show.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a huge amount of watching numbers because, like, it's just as you play the game, you're going to get higher gear up until you get to 950. It kind of just gives it to you. There's certain things you have to go after, and yeah, there's some luck involved in terms of getting, you know, certain things in certain slots at certain times. But, you know, in terms of, it's nice that you can go play whatever activity that you want to play as much as you want to play it, and you can continue to, quote unquote, get more powerful through your artifact. So yeah, that's an interesting dynamic with as much, you know, the PvP direction that Destiny's gone and the Gambit direction that Destiny's gone and the PvE direction that Destiny's gone and the raid direction that Destiny's gone. If you have these players that used to hate, well, you're making me play PvP to get the better gear for PvE. It's like, well, you can just go play PvE now and do whatever you want and continue to level your artifact. But I also am very interested to see, because they've set the standard of seasonally or every new content release increasing the power level. And I'm going to be really curious to see how they're going to spin this, because I don't think that they're going to increase the power level at all this year. I think it's all going to be focused around the artifact resetting every 90 days when their seasons change. And then they can do new, cool, and exciting things within the artifact. Like, there's a really cool mod in the artifact right now that's like a void grenade that you throw. Obviously, you throw a grenade, but it's a void grenade. And when you hit an enemy with it, it puts a damage debuff on the enemy for you to do like 30% more damage. And it's from a grenade. And it also kind of pigeonholes you into running a void class for you to be able to have that void grenade. So, but it's a huge thing. Like, it's a necessary thing to throw this at one of those champions after you break their barrier to kill them fast enough so that they don't put their barrier back up. So there's this huge, you know, strategy and build to it of getting more of a MMO RPG style that they've been kind of going for versus what they were calling for a long time when they were still attached to Activision, like a shared world shooter, because they didn't want to like shy away from certain players. And now they're kind of like, well, they're kind of just doing their own thing. And then with the change for us, for Michael and myself of our endeavor, I as well dabbled into a gaming PC. I'm not a specs guy, so if you really want to know the specs of my PC, I can look it up and tell you. I don't have them in front of me. I just know that I can run. I did the website, like caniRunIt.com or whatever, and I had it read my PC, and I can run like 95% of the games at recommended settings.
Nice. It's a start.
Yeah.
It's a start.
I mean, my friend helped me out big time. I initially wanted to take like my streaming PC that I've been using, and I wanted to put a better graphics card in it. And when I tried to put the graphics card in there, it didn't fit. Because I have a Optiplex compact PC that's pretty powerful for streaming. And then my friend kind of saw what was going on, and he kind of said, hey, like, I have a secondary rig that I didn't have a graphics card for anymore. Like, let's talk. And we ended up coming to an agreement, and now he kind of put my streaming PC back together for me. And then he set up this, I know it's a CyberPower PC. That's about as much as I know. Then I, you know, went into Games Pass, and, you know, I got Games Pass for like $1 this month or 2 months, and then it's like $5 a month because I don't have the console. So, and there's a ton
it's
of
so
stuff.
Worth it.
Yeah, there's a ton of stuff on there that I'm like, oh, that's going to be kind of cool. Like, I've never played a Gears game. Like, I might have played it at like a friend's house for like 5 or 10 minutes, but I never like sat down and played a Gears game. So Some of those things I was waiting to do for when we launched this endeavor. And that is now launched, so that I can stream for you guys, and you guys can maybe see some of my impressions of playing a game.
Do you like roguelikes?
I don't know. Like,
okay.
I mean, I've heard really, really good things about Dead Cells.
Okay. There's a roguelike, it's a first-person shooter, sci-fi first-person shooter that has a lot of humor.
Okay.
That's on Game Pass, mm-hmm. that I highly recommend. It's in my top 10 list for Game of the Year.
Okay.
So far, Void Bastards.
Okay.
You need to download that. It's a good roguelike shooter. I enjoy Game Pass so much. It's kind of becoming the new PS Plus for me, where I'm just downloading games that I probably have no intention to ever play or have time for, and I just keep downloading games. Like, I have Crackdown 3. I know that those reviews weren't great for Crackdown 3, but I got it anyways. I'm finally able to play Sunset Overdrive.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many things, and then
like Outer Worlds.
Outer Worlds,
yeah. Like, yeah. I wanted to play that this weekend, and work didn't like work out for me to be able to play it. I need to just download it. The brief little bit of streams that I've seen and stuff like that, and like when talking to a friend of mine that loves this game and loves all the Fallout games, because Bethesda used to make, or not Bethesda. Not Bethesda.
Obsidian made
New Vegas. Arguably, what people are saying has been one of the better Fallout games in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
It appears to be very dialogue heavy.
yeah. It is going to be dialogue heavy. It is an RPG, but the combat seems to be pretty solid.
I just hope I get to the combat before I fall asleep.
What if I told you that it's like a 15 to 20 hour game?
It doesn't scare me. I saw somebody tweet something out at launch that does reviews and stuff like that said he was already kind of like getting ready to start his second playthrough, and I'm like, in my head, I'm like, I know what this guy does, I know how he plays games, he's only had this for 3 or 4 days, like, oh, that's not too bad.
Yeah, so. it's not a full-blown like Bethesda style RPG.
I heard you can make it like a 40-hour game if you want to.
It sounds like you're really like scraping every last bit of content, but if you want to just plow through it, you can get through it in like 15 hours. I'm looking forward to like really diving into it.
I'm really looking forward to like Halo games and Outer Worlds, and Gears of War games and Outer Worlds, and then I know I'm pretty sure that Halo is coming to the Halo collection, the Master Chief collection is going to be coming to Games Pass. I really like Bungie as a studio, obviously because I have a very, you know, affinity for Destiny, so playing some of their first games that they made and stuff like that, in terms of like it's intriguing to me. Like Halo, I don't think I've ever played.
I've only played it here and there, and I'm looking forward to jumping into Halo. I played the first one, that's it.
Yeah, so it's definitely something that's, you know, like on the top of my list of that Master Chief collection is very interesting to me. And then, you know, I'm being introduced to, like, as I scroll through Twitter, I see, like, I saw something today. Like, there's a couple things that are intriguing me about it. Like, you know, Wario will tweet out, oh, this game's on sale. Torchlight 2, I think it was. Like, I'm like, okay, like, it sounds like it's a really cool game. It's $15.99 on Amazon and $15.99 on PSN and $4 on Steam. I'm like, huh. So, you know, it's like $4, you know, it's like, I've heard about all these Steam sales and stuff like that and adding things to your library, and it's like, oh boy, you know, like, but in terms of how much stuff I potentially have missed that was maybe PC exclusive or that I didn't play, you know, years ago, and you're still like, it's still expensive on the Sony store, but it's on part of the Steam summer sale and it's like $4, you know, like that'll all be things that I would love to dabble in. And then for anybody that's going to ask, I just plug my SCUF Vantage into my PC and I play with a controller. Like, I'm not going to mouse and keyboard. Like, I can't. I can't. If the only way that I think I would ever mouse and keyboard a game is if it's a brand new genre to me. Like, I don't think I could ever play a shooter with mouse and keyboard. I tried to play Destiny 2 with mouse and keyboard. And Destiny 2 looks amazing on PC, by the way. It's like running at like 90 frames on my computer. And it's like, it looks just so much better. And the load times are so much better. But my friends are on PlayStation. I'm going to try my hardest to stay on PlayStation. So those are all things that are like super interesting to me. And you know, being able to stream some stuff and to change that things. I spent a lot of time getting the PC ready, and then, you know, I got like a HDMI switch for my PC and my console, and I got a keyboard switch so I don't have like four keyboards on my desk and anything like that. So I spent a lot of time tinkering with things and learning how to do things. And Michael knows this about me, and when I tinker with something and it doesn't work, I get very annoyed very quickly. So my wife has been a godsend to me, where she's like, okay, you need to leave the room. And then I leave the room and I come back and she's like, this is how this works. And I'm like, oh, okay. So that's kind of one of those things that's been, you know, a huge deal to me. So I would love to, if there are, you know, Michael recommended Void Bastard. If there are recommendations from you guys, I love interacting with the community. And I hope that we are able to build a diverse, large gaming community with Digital Days Gaming. In many facets of the world, and I want to know what you guys want to see or what you guys think I should check out. That stuff is very important to me.
Yeah, for me, playing, I won't bore anyone with Overwatch talk just yet, because that will be next week when they announce Overwatch 2 at BlizzCon. My main thing I've been focusing on the last couple days, just because the last couple weeks I've just kind of been not gaming too much. I've been watching a lot of wrestling, because there's wrestling on every night of the week now, which is like a blessing and a curse. Like, I'm kind of tired of wrestling, but I can't stop watching because it's just always available. But back to video games. The only video game that I've really been playing the last couple days, at least, has been Call of Duty Modern Warfare, which we were lucky enough to get a code from Activision for. And this is an old school Call of Duty game. It's so fucking weird that in 2019 I'm saying old school Call of Duty and I'm referring to a Modern Warfare game, because it feels like it wasn't too long ago when I was playing Modern Warfare 2 and 3. But this is like the Call of Duty a lot of us kind of grew up on. This is definitely feels like the Call of Duty I played in high school. It's not the sci-fi space adventure that we've kind of been having the last couple years. There's like no double jumping, no crazy wall running. This is this is something that they said last year when they were talking about Black Ops 4, of boots on the ground sort of Call of Duty play style. It's your run and gun, but nothing crazy. And it's been, surprisingly breath of fresh air, for a shooting game, that isn't, you know, like trying to be science fiction. And I've been slowly going from getting my ass kicked every single match, to putting up decent numbers and just getting back to like bare bones Call of Duty. Like, I'm not to say that this as a package is bare bones, but in terms of like a stripped down version of what the multiplayer has become, this has been really fun. Of just basic gun loadouts, kill streaks are back and they're simplified. They're nothing too crazy. There's no operators for the standard multiplayer, so there's no special hero characters that you have to worry about different special abilities and like trying to counter pick other people. The only counter picking you're doing is if there's a sniper and you have to have a sniper battle, and the map seem to be pretty favorable for snipers in some and a good portion of the maps. But I feel like every Call of Duty game you'll hear people complain about, oh, there's too many snipers. It's like, there's always going to be snipers if there's a sniper rifle option.
People are always going to gravitate towards a one hit kill.
Yes, and
no matter what.
And Call of Duty, because they have a sniper rifle, have to make certain parts of the map favorable for snipers. So you just have to learn and adapt. It's always tough the first, like, two, 3 weekends as people are learning the maps. and then learning to avoid it. But I've been spending most of my time, it's only been like 2 days I've had the game, just playing like just regular multiplayer. I have a day off this week that I want to get through like the single player campaign, which I could probably do in one sitting because it's a Call of Duty campaign. Sounds like it's like 4 to 6 hours.
I have a friend that platinumed the game on Friday.
Dedication, man. It must be a, like a midnight launch guy.
No, it's just Johnny.
Oh, yeah. No, Johnny works from home sometimes. So I've been playing the regular multiplayer. It's cross-play. Unless there's not an Xbox logo for Xbox players on the player list, I've only been playing against PlayStation and PC people. PC people with controller. But playing with people on other platforms, shocker, spoiler, it's not a big deal. It works. It's a big deal in terms of the fact that I can play with those people and I can actually make a party with my friends on PC. Like that option, those options are available. I can search for PC players or search for people on other platforms.
How do you communicate with them though?
So you have a Call of Duty account.
Right, but how do you communicate with them in the game?
They have an option to like search for tags, and then there's a little chat thing in the main menu. If you don't have like
a voice chat,
A voice chat. There is voice chat, but they also have like a text chat in the right. bottom of the screen.
How does it sound? Like, have you done voice chat?
It sounds fine. Okay. I think it's just going to become like in terms of the quality of like headsets. It is funny though. Since I've been playing Overwatch, Overwatch is pretty toxic at times, but it's a different level of toxicity. It's like everyone wants to be a super pro toxic. I forgot how bad some of the Call of Duty bros are in terms of their toxicity, and I've been reintroduced to that, and it's been kind of hilarious just because I'm playing just regular multiplayer. I'm not playing like a battle royale mode with my friends. I'm just like hopping into matches whenever I can and playing with strangers. You know, cause it's easier to do that than coordinate with my friends. So getting back to like how the Call of Duty community can be sometimes is a little interesting, especially I think Modern Warfare is going to bring a lot of people that stop playing back into it, just because of the name and the branding behind the Modern Warfare logo and brand. So I'm enjoying that. There are new modes. There's the 2v2 like cage match mode. That is fun, but definitely something you need to have someone else that you know playing with you, because trying to coordinate with a stranger in that mode where it's like every move is critical and counts and the matches go quick. So it's a mode that I've dabbled in, but I've been playing a lot of solo without my friends. So I've been having to go into the cage match by myself with a stranger, and it's not like the best experience, but it's super intense and interesting, especially when your partner is down and it's just you versus two other people in a tiny, tiny map. And each round you get a different gun, and everyone has the same type of gun per, you know, in each round. So just getting, you see what gun you have and you're like, you immediately are like, okay, I got like 5 seconds to think of a strategy and get into place and then try and knock out the opponents. I'm digging that mode. It's definitely a mode that I want to dive into more when I actually can play with my friends more consistently. Cause right now it's just like whatever game I can get into if my friends are on or not. Jumping into it. Another new mode is the ground war mode, which is basically just it's a battlefield style mode where there's this huge map, like a pretty big map for Call of Duty, not as big as Black Ops 4 Blackout map, but it's 64 players and it's objective based. There's multiple points on the map that you're trying to take over, and just like a tug of war sort of scenario. This mode I don't like at all. I don't know if it's just like the map design for it, but because it's a huge game, this is definitely, if people are complaining about like snipers, then it's probably from this mode. Just because in my experience over the last like 2 days, people kind of just hunker down in an area and then just snipe. Like if you're just running around with a machine gun into open field, you have 32 people on the other team that are probably in perches, just waiting to pick someone off that just spawns or just is running in the street. So I'm not finding too much fun with that mode. I do want to see if I can get a full squad of like my friends in that mode and see if we can coordinate better to take points down. It's definitely a very team focused experience as opposed to like regular multiplayer where you can just Leroy Jenkins your way to victory. In like standard multiplayer, ground war definitely seems to be something that you need to coordinate with your friends, but even then it's 64 people, so your squad of four people might not be enough to turn the tides of war in your favor. But overall, like it's a Call of Duty game, so the guns feel good. Map design's pretty solid. I haven't had any standout maps, but I haven't had a map that I felt is poorly designed, which is probably because I'm less picky with that stuff. I'm sure there's like some Call of Duty experts out there are like, no, some maps are inherently bad, but I've figured out most of the maps and have found a different strategy of like, okay, this is where the sniper nests are. I'm going to stay away from there, or I'm going to switch guns if I have to go over there. So I'm enjoying that. I still need to do like the single player mode, which I'll probably talk about next week because I'll play that in its entirety. And then the special ops mode or whatever it's called. I need to dabble in that. But I've only had the game for 2 days, so it's kind of hard for me to like dive into all that with work. And then we're launching a podcast, so it's been pretty busy. But yeah, definitely going to be a lot of Call of Duty talk next week and maybe a little bit throughout the next couple weeks.
Awesome. Yes, again, thank you to Activision for sending us that code and helping us out with our content. We appreciate that very, very much.
Yes.
All right, so that is the core of what the show will be on a regular basis. We are going to try to release every Friday around, I think that around noon-ish Eastern time is the time frame that we would like to release our podcast on. So you can hopefully look forward to that. Lots of people will ask this, so we're going to start this. So support and social media. So right off the bat, social media, Twitter, at Digital Days Pod. Digital Days Gaming was too long. So it's Digital Days Pod. You can follow us there. Then we will have a Facebook page, a Facebook like page as well that we'll post certain things from. And we're looking into some of the other stuff like Instagram and things like that still. So the Twitter, again, is at Digital Days Pod. Michael's Twitter is at the first MJC, 1ST. And then my Twitter is at Good Dave Hunt. So that is also my PSN is Good Dave Hunting. And my Steam ID is also Good Dave Hunting. Michael's PSN is at the first MJC. And I don't know your Steam, if you have one.
Yeah, same.
The same. Okay.
First MJC across everything.
Nice. The other form of support that we're going to have that I feel is necessary in 2019 is that we are going to do, we do have a Patreon. And that Patreon will be live. We'll have links to it as needed on social medias and things like that. So it's very confined, though. So first, $1 tip jar. If you want to support us and just drop us a tip, please do so. A dollar now is a dollar that we didn't have, and we appreciate it. And you know, we would love you guys to support the podcast in any way that you can. And it's just a tip, and you'll get thank yous. You'll be on the Patreon list. You'll be available for us to communicate with you through the Patreon page. And the next tier that we will have is a $5 tier, and that will get you access to our Discord server. When we become a Twitch affiliate, which I feel will be very soon based on support from you guys as a community, following and paying attention to streams and stuff like that, if you do subscribe to us through Twitch when we become affiliated, that will also get you access to the Discord because those $2 go together. A Twitch sub is worth $5, or if you're choosing to pledge $5 to us directly through Patreon, then you will get access to the Discord as well. $7 a month will get you a bonus episode. So we will release an episode once a week. We will try to hit every single week. I don't see any reason why we wouldn't be able to unless something crazy happens. Like I said, on Fridays. But we will do a fifth episode for that month. And that could be with a guest. It could be something, you know, that's very, you know, maybe WWE focused or very movie focused or very game centric. We're both playing. I'm going to use Death Stranding as an example, but I have no intentions of playing the game. It could be like a Death Stranding spoiler cast. It could be a Last of Us 2 spoiler cast. It could be, you know, like a deep dive into Google Stadia if one of us gets it. It could be anything. And that would be the bonus podcast. And then if anybody is crazy enough or generous enough to do the $10 a month, you will get the podcast 24 hours early. So like I said, our goal is to release the podcast on Fridays at noon. And Patreon users that pledge $10 a month would get the podcast on Thursdays at noon Eastern time. The only time that this would not happen, and it would more than likely be released as a separate segment or as a separate episode altogether, would be if we ever get the opportunity for an embargoed content. Embargoed content would be like if we get to review Last of Us Part 2 and the embargo lifts at Tuesday at 2 a.m. The Last of Us review, Michael and I might jump on and record something for 20 minutes, 30 minutes, just talking about the game, and that would release when the embargoes would lift so that we are in line with everybody else and the expectation of what goes with a review copy that would not be behind the Patreon wall. If there is a need for higher tiers, we can always add them, but we wanted to, you know, keep something very small and confined to allow you guys to possibly show support for us. And if you choose to, great. If you choose to just listen to the podcast and review it and share it on social media, that's just as good for us. It's just more exposure. It's an adventure that Michael and I are going out on our own together. It's just him and I. His significant other is supporting him and helping, and my significant other is supporting me and helping. My wife has been a huge asset to building this and launching this product. She made the logo. So if you like the logo, she made it, through, I think probably what, like 30 or 40 trial and error things, Michael?
Probably. I only saw like a handful of them. Yeah.
So, you know, she's been a huge asset. It's been an interesting, you know, couple of weeks for both Michael and I. But I love working with Michael. I love conversating with Michael, and I think Patreon will help us conversate with you guys even better. And I want to be,
is that a word?
Conversate?
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
And if you are willing to financially support us, like it will not go to anything but upgrading the content that we're trying to create, whether it's through streams or through the YouTube channel or through the podcast, or, you know, like we are going to attempt to live stream the podcasts every Sunday at 9:30. So if you want to see the podcast, yes, I do realize that that is a couple of days lead. The podcast is being streamed on Sundays at 9:30, and the goal would be to release it on Fridays. That allows us time to edit and adjust and things like that. And if we are finding that it is obtainable to move that day up, then we will move that day up. Yeah. And if that day moves up, then the Patreon support for 24 hours early moves up as well. So, right now we're just giving ourselves obtainable goals. It's part of the reason why when we talked about news and stuff like that, that we don't want to use like quote unquote, like filler news, because we wanted you to be able to go back and listen to a show from 2 or 3 weeks ago and not feel like you're like, oh, I already know all about this stuff. Like this is a conversation about what Michael and I think about something that's going on in the world or in the gaming industry or impressions of a game. Like I don't have Modern Warfare. I probably won't pick it up until Black Friday if I can, when it's $20, like it almost always is. And, then we can have a conversation about that if we need to. But if you guys are super supportive of certain things through Patreon and things like that, we'll be able to do more things. And you know, to delve out a little bit more, to purchase a game if we need to purchase a game to allow us to stream and to have better content. So we're going to be all over youtube.com/digitaldaysgaming. Patreon, I don't have the URL for the Patreon yet. I'm assuming it's patreon.com/digitaldaysgaming, more than likely. All those links will be in our social medias, and if you guys consider, you know, supporting us, like that's awesome, that's amazing. If you don't, we will have a Facebook group that you can be a part of and conversate with us as well there. But I don't know if you wanted to say anything on Patreon.
No, not much. I think you nailed it. It's just it's easier if we have a Patreon. It helps us create content and then improve upon content. Me and Dave have full-time jobs and a lot of responsibilities. The support we can potentially get from Patreon will help us kind of balance those responsibilities a little bit more and open up different opportunities for us. Like Dave said, sometimes we only get access, if we get any access to a game, we don't have a control on how much access we have. And this could potentially help us cover more content and make a better show, improve equipment that we have. That might be a little old, that we've been using for a couple years. Any support we can get through Patreon would be greatly appreciated. And if you can't support us through Patreon, that's fine too. As long as you're listening, interacting with us, that's all I can ever ask for, is that you're interacting and enjoying what you're listening to. So feedback, sharing the podcast with your friends, all those social media retweets and hearts, all of that helps. So any support that you can provide would be greatly appreciated.
Yeah, and we'll get into the ways that, you know, next week, ways that you guys can interact with us. But feel free, if there's a topic that you would like to see us, you know, if something comes out and you want to, you know, hear our perspective on it, post it in the Facebook group, post it on Twitter, tag us on Twitter. You know, I don't know if, I'm still learning about Patreon as we go. And I don't really like going into something that I'm not 100% for sure how it all works, but we'll figure it out, and we'll figure it out together. And I'll be open and upfront with you guys. I have no idea how I'm going to release a podcast 24 hours early on Patreon yet, but I know Patreon handles it. I know that much. And I know, you know, through the RSS feeds, they have the ability to deal with that. So those are all things that we're going to grow and evolve and learn together. And I will tell you up front now, we will make mistakes as we are learning. So please just bear with us, hang out with us. I would, you know, love to interact with you guys. And, you know, it's this is our thing together. And we're gonna have a blast doing it. And we're going to grow a community. And we're going to have a whole hell of a lot of fun while we do it. I know it. So I hope that you guys are willing to hang out on the ride. And the outpouring of social media support that Michael and I both got over the last month or so has been overwhelming and humbling all at the same time. So, but yeah, links will be in the show notes. And they will also be all over social media when this launches. So if you're listening to this right away, thank you guys so much for the support. And please just share the show to anybody and review it, like the pages, follow us, hearts, the whole nine. Whatever you can do to help us, we would love and appreciate it. But that is episode one of Digital Days Gaming. I have been Dave, and that has been Michael, and I hope everyone has